Hi, I'm Philip Shepherd. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this amazing once-in-a-lifetime conference, and especially to the Meditation and Breathwork channel, which I'm proud to be sponsoring because meditation and breathwork are essential to my teachings. I'm the founder of the Embodied Present Process, or TEP, which is based on my two books and is taught worldwide. And here's one thing I believe about meditation and breathwork. You limit your experience of both if you imagine that your mind is just the thoughts in your head. Your mind permeates your every cell. Every stirring of energy within your body is an expression of it. So, if you wish to calm your mind, the most direct route is to develop the skills that enable you to feel the body's energy and ground it in the spaciousness of the present. That's what my work is about. If that appeals to you, I hope you'll check out my two presentations, one on this channel and one on the main stage. You might also be interested in a special offer exclusive to the Embodiment Conference to listen to one of my embodied meditations for yourself for free. You can find a link to the special offer in the description of this presentation or on the show notes. And now, enjoy the presentation.
Welcome, everyone. Our guest today is Dr. Kavita Chinnayan, a cardiologist and professor of medicine at Oakland University William Beaumont School of Medicine in Royal Oak. She has studied varied methods, Ayurveda and yoga, with teachers across the globe. She is also author of many books that I hope we can talk more about. Shakti Rising won the Nautilus Gold Award for Best Books of 2017. And another book of her, Glorious Alchemy, is another book I hope we will have a chance to chat also about. Kavita, is there anything you would like to add to present yourself in your own words, not in this quite cold maybe manner by me doing it?
Yeah, so no, this was great. Thank you. It was very warm and very sweet. Yes, as you said, I'm a cardiologist and a practicing cardiologist and also a practitioner of Tantra. So this is a fun topic for me. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you. When I was arriving into our session, I noticed that maybe it's not visible, but there is a certain elephant in the room when we bring topic of Tantra to the conference. As Tantra as a method, as a tradition, has been, I don't want to use the word kidnapped, but maybe it is a good word to use. Definitely was it has been culturally appropriated by many neo-tantric traditions, so to speak, and for many listeners who are based in Western Europe, for example, or in the Western world in general, the word Tantra may not capture the depth and the ancient tradition that is behind this word. So I would like to open this space to start from explaining the depth of the word Tantra, how you understand it.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak about that, because you're right, the word Tantra has been totally misused and misappropriated by not just the West, I would say. It's just, you know, a global misunderstanding, I would say. So let's come back to the beginning. What is Tantra really? And what is the purpose of it? So the word Tantra comes from two roots, Tantra. So Tan, it alludes to the expansion or elaboration, you know, expansion, and I'll come to what we are talking about. Mm-hmm. So expansion is what is alluded to by the word, by the root Tan. And Tra has many different meanings. One meaning is an instrument. So you can think of Tantra as the instrument for expansion. The other meaning of that root, tra, is protection. So you can then say that Tantra is a system of philosophy and practice which expands on the nature of reality, the nature of what is. And it protects us from what? It protects us from the suffering of not having lived to this expansion. So then it comes down to this fundamental question of why do we need it at all? You know, what is the purpose of this? It comes down to, you know, what is it that each of us is ultimately seeking? You know, it doesn't matter where we are from, you know, India, America, Europe, doesn't matter what our, you know, race is or gender orientation is or what our economic status is. Whoever we are and wherever we come from, we're all seeking one thing. And what is that? So ultimately, you know, what we are all seeking is to find this permanent source of contentment. You know, I wouldn't even say happiness, because when we say happiness, it just, you know, it brings to mind a certain state of mind or a certain state of being. But that's not it. We want to be ultimately the thing that we all of us are seeking, you know, is that we want to be free of the seeking. We just don't want to be, you know, seeking anymore, because all of our lives are punctuated by this constant next thing that we are going to feel complete with, you know, whether it is the next cup of coffee or the next meal or the next relationship or the next job or whatever it is. We're always thinking, if I have this, then I'm going to feel good. But that this never happens, because it's a continuous process. And what Tantra teaches us, as many other ancient traditions do, is that that is the fundamental root of suffering. And it is protection from this suffering that Tantra gives us the opportunity to explore. And the suffering, as you know, Tantra will teach us, is the result of limiting or limited consciousness. So when we expand that to include the entire fabric of reality, then suffering is no longer our default mode. So Tantra is actually an ancient practice. Nobody really knows how old it is. You know, some historical sources say 6th to 7th century, but that's not even actually right, because tantric elements actually come even from the Vedas, which, you know, date back to about 3000 BC, the oldest of the Vedas. So when I speak about Tantra, I'm really talking about classical Tantra. And my specific, you know, practice and training has been in the traditions, the non-dual tantric traditions of Shakta Tantra and Shaiva Tantra.
Thank you for this extremely comprehensive and mind-opening, heart-opening explanation. It's fascinating to me what you said about protection coming from expansion not coming through expansion. It could be counterintuitive, at least for my Western mind, as very often protection is presented to us as something that we create by gating ourselves, by creating strong boundaries, by yes, isolation, and bringing this element of safety that comes from fullness of reality is definitely heart opening for me.
Yes, absolutely. And that is why this tradition, you know, is difficult to comprehend, actually, because it is full of paradoxes, you know, including this very, you know, very fundamental paradox in its very definition. So, and the whole path of Tantra is full of such paradoxes. So we, in order to attain something, we would do the opposite, and it won't make any logical sense, but, you know, it just opens itself in that expansive way.
the intuition that comes from to me that comes from experience, be the most successful or the most embodied way to understand and experience paradox and all these polarities that are happening within us. And I understand Tantra is inviting us to explore. It comes through practice. And I wonder if you would be willing to guide us through short meditation or maybe other practice so we could experience it.
Absolutely. So shall we do that now?
That would be wonderful. I think it also helps us to arrive into this shared space together.
Yes, absolutely. So let's take a seat and become refreshed in our posture. It always helps to have a very stable and broad base of being seated where you feel like you can sit like this forever. And if you're leaning back, you know, sit straight with your spine kind of rising very gently and being erect. Close your eyes. Have your hands in your lap. And take one relaxing, deep breath. And as you exhale, just relax your eyes, your jaw and tongue, your neck and shoulders, your hips and knees, ankles. And take another easy breath in. And once again, as you exhale, relax, feeling this wave of relaxation washing over you. Now feel as if you are glued to the surface you're on, stable. And for the next few moments, you have nowhere to go, nothing to do. Allow your breath to fall into its natural rhythm. And bring your attention to your belly. Notice how it moves with your breath. Don't try to change anything about it. Just notice how easily your breath comes in and leaves with no seeming effort from you. The belly moves on its own. Breath is flowing. Listen to the sound of your breath, even as you have your gentle attention on your belly. And now, bring your attention to the sound of my voice. And become curious about its source. The sound arises and falls. Your breath arises and falls. Your whole body moves in and out of your awareness. The sounds in your room, they arise and fall. Your own thoughts and memories, come and go. What is the space that holds it all? Notice if there's any inside or outside. Any boundaries to the space? Image of your neighbors, your neighboring homes, buildings, and cars. They all arise in this boundaryless, vast, directionless space. Your attractions and aversions, your likes and dislikes, your loves and your hates, they all arise and subside in this vast space. Come back to your body. Wiggle your toes and your fingers. Become aware of the surface you're seated on. Take one deep breath. Rub your hands together. Place them over your face and your eyes. And open your eyes.
Thank you so much, Kavita.
You're so welcome.
Really interesting experience now coming back to the screen. I definitely can experience in my body this unity with you, with Laura, with George, as people present also on the screen, this interconnectedness and wholeness of all of us being connected.
Yes, it's powerful.
And I would like to admit that at some point during the meditation, I also noticed some anxiety of losing my boundaries and losing this sense of self and ego. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this is maybe common experience, especially for those of us who grew up believing or being taught that my individuality and my self, my strong boundaries, my own success, are the most important values or qualities I should be developing, and then losing this sense of self even for a moment to experience this unity is beautiful, but is also causing my heart beating faster and not agreeing on it.
Yeah, and this is why, you know, and this is why it is a long and arduous path, you know, because it does require training the mind and training the body, a lot of discipline and practice day in and day out. And for weeks and months and years and decades, for you know, this limitedness, this individuality that you are talking about is what we want to expand, is what needs to expand. It's not like you lose your individuality. See, it's like, you know, when white light passes through a prism, it breaks into all these different colors, right? Mm-hmm. On the other side, like the whole rainbow. And so, you know, the entire tantric path is actually to go back through that prism to experience, you know, the wholeness of who we are, who, you know, our true nature. But that is only one part of the journey. The other part of the journey is to return again. And it's actually a simultaneous thing of going in and out, returning again to this unique body mind that we have. And the expression of this, you know, this single white light as this particular color. Mm-hmm. And so it's a movement that goes up and down, so to speak. And so it is about losing individuality, but not in the way that we think that, okay, does that mean I'm never going to have boundaries with people? Does it mean I'm going to go become a pushover? Does it mean I'm going to change my way of being? And does it mean, you know, I'm going to blend into, you know, one mush where I'm no longer, you know, seen as being unique or different? No, it's none of that. You know, and these are all the fears of that limited mind that is inherent in being human. It's not a flaw. It's not a fault. It is the very fundamental act of reality is to create this limitedness.
What you are saying brings me back to what you have mentioned at the beginning about expansion and protection. And it brings me to the space of the heart, as you are also a cardiologist. I am extremely curious how this expansion around the heart center and the protection even of the ribcage, physical protection, how do you link it with spirituality in your work, as this is this physical work of a cardiologist and there is the spiritual path. I'm extremely curious how you are bringing it together.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, even though we call it a, you know, a spiritual path, mm. right? It doesn't have to be advertised or spoken of as such, because Tantra is first and foremost extremely logical. You know, it is, its fundamental base is actually pure logic. So it is really about pragmatism, practicality, and logic. So it isn't like, you know, we bring all kinds of spiritual concepts into it. In fact, the more we bring in these kinds of concepts, the more it becomes confusing. So in, you know, I'm constantly talking Tantra, mm-hmm. with my patients, with anybody, but it doesn't have to be advertised as such. It just needs to be presented in the way it is meant to be, which is logic. You know, here is the problem. You have this particular health problem, mm-hmm. right? Now, what can we do to alleviate it? And being really honest about it, is this a disease that can be cured? First of all, very few diseases in my field are curable. Most all of them are really manageable. So how do we manage that? What is going to shift in your perspective as a result of this disease? Can you look at this disease as a gift that is given to you so that you can wake up from this limitation? You can see your potential as more than a person with a disease. You know, what happens is when we have a disease like heart disease or cancer or some such terrible thing, that disease becomes our identity. You know, all of a sudden you go from being, you know, a man or a woman with this job or with so many kids, or this is my cultural history, this is my social history, to suddenly becoming, you know, a heart disease survivor, a cancer survivor. So it becomes part of our identity. So in other words, the disease is actually taken on to add more, another dimension of limitation to who we think we are. Mm. And so instead, can this disease itself become a stepping stone to freedom and expansion? And how do we go about doing that? You know, how do we go about, you know, dealing with the disease in a very practical way, with medications, with addressing lifestyle and discipline and all of those things? And at the same time, cultivating a perspective where you see that, you know, I tell my patients all the time that life is actually very kind. You know, it's continuously giving us opportunities. It's like an alarm clock. It keeps going off and we keep hitting the snooze button, you know, and going back to sleep. And it's continuously, you know, giving us opportunities to wake up, to arise and transcend the suffering that is the reality of our life. And the disease can be seen, if it can be seen, as a gift. And this happens, I see this all the time, that happens with my patients, many times spontaneously, many times through such guidance, where they suddenly, you know, wake up and say, well, you know, I've been looking at my whole life, this whole thing, in a very wrong way. Mm-hmm. So my disease is actually a gift to me, because now I can see that I'm no longer the disease. I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. So what am I? So we start asking the most important questions, mm-hmm. if we can have that shift in perspective. So I see my job as a cardiologist to not only advise people about surgeries, prescribe medications and procedures, and lifestyle changes and discipline, which are really the foundation of Tantra. But it is really to, you know, convey this idea that, hey, you're not your disease. You know, you're not this person that is suffering from the disease. Can you see that? Can you be open to this idea that there is something far more for you than this limitation of the diagnosis, so to speak? Mm. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. Thank you so much for this perspective. And You mentioned also the word discipline being a very important part of Tantra. And yes. It made me curious about what kind of discipline do you practice, as we are also here to learn from our guests about these daily life practices that they are actually practicing that enrich their lives and make them more embodied or more within themselves. So I'm curious about your routine.
So, you know, and this is not true only for Tantra. This is true for all disciplines, is that in order to transcend our limitations, first and foremost, we need to establish physiologic stability, stability in our neurohormonal pathways, so to speak. And that means that we have to have a baseline of stability and some degree of quietness, you know, within the body and the mind. It is only in that context of stability that big and large insights can happen. And it is to form that stability. And it's not a stability that it's like, okay, I'm just going to meditate 3 hours a day and I'm going to become quiet. It's not like that. Because that stability has to seep in. Now, see, Tantra is not a discipline that is about renunciation. So it's not like saying, you know, I'm going to ignore my body, not take care of my body, and, you know, eat whatever, do whatever, and I'm going to meditate and my, you know, transcend my body like that. That is not the tenet of Tantra. Tantra is really about integrating the mind and body into this here, because the body is the portal for experience. We cannot have an experience in a disembodied state. It is only through embodiment that we can experience the world, right? The senses and all of that. Experience can only happen in embodiment. And so the body is included in tantric sadhanas, tantric practices, and that begins with lifestyle and discipline, because we want to establish a harmony in the body mind first. And so the lifestyle here, you know, is very much in alignment with the Ayurvedic lifestyle, which is wake up at the same time, sleep at the same time, eat at the same time, and don't eat after a particular time, and what kinds of things to avoid eating. And these things don't make sense from a modern nutritional standpoint, you know, viewpoint, because it's not about vitamins or minerals or carbohydrates or protein. It is really about its subtle property. So if I say, for instance, you know, don't eat broccoli or cauliflower or cabbage, it's not that they don't have nutrients. It's not that. They are, you know, very nutritious, but they have subtle properties that act on the neurohormonal pathways, cause a lot of mental noise, cause a lot of instability in these hormonal pathways. And that's what we want to avoid. And so, you know, there is a whole practice of this, and which, you know, I go over in my book, The Heart of Wellness. And it is really first establishing that. And once that is established, that is when deep insights into the nature of reality can start to happen.
Thank you for this perspective. One question that I wanted to ask at the beginning also of our session is maybe coming back to the title of the session, that is about marriage of Tantra and modern medicine. And for me, and I believe for many other people, the most present health issue nowadays is COVID and coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if we could also link the practices that you mentioned with how to support our immune system, our emotional immune system, so we can actually create space for all the emotions that are arising with the changes in the world, but also our physical immune system, so we can actually face safely go to the world without maybe full isolation. I wonder what is your take on it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, lifestyle is everything for immunity. And, you know, there are no supplements and things that can do the work without, you know, a really disciplined lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So But the beauty of, you know, this lifestyle and this practice, and which comes from Ayurveda, is that if we have our lifestyle down, we don't need any supplements, because it's really the rewiring of the neural pathways, the hormonal pathways, and the immune pathways that result in this, you know, harmony within the body. And so there is, you know, more of a resistance to these external stressors, such as viruses and bacteria and things like that. So you do see, actually, and this in, you know, in the general community as well, people who are very disciplined about their lifestyle, people who are very, you know, who really take good care of themselves, have an innate kind of an immunity. Whereas, you know, because part of that discipline is also not taking in stuff from the world that is not helpful through even our senses. You know, what we watch, the kinds of conversations we engage in, the kinds of discussions we engage in, and you know, this constant mental noise of us versus them, you know, all this divisiveness that goes on in the world, staying away from all that and really having kind of a broader perspective, which I was talking about, which is, you know, uncertainty is the only certainty. You know, the only certain thing in life is change. Everything is continuously changing. And nobody expected this to happen in 2020, but who knows, you know, this can keep happening. So the only two options, and this is what I tell my patients too, you only have two options. One is you evolve and adapt to the situation. You adapt to the situation and you evolve and you, you know, transcend it and grow higher, grow more, or you fall apart. You know, there is no third way, you know? So, well, the third way would be to do neither and just be stagnant, I suppose. But the wise thing to do is to understand the uncertainty and say, okay, here is this opportunity of this pandemic. So can I change my lifestyle? All these years I was, you know, pushing it off, but can I change my lifestyle and see how best to deal with this circumstance, you know?
And if there was one lifestyle change, usually our big lifestyle changes take time and can very often become overwhelming. If there was this one lifestyle change you would recommend for people that they could start practicing now, today?
Yeah. Well, the most important thing is regularity of your schedule. So the thing that I would recommend is go to bed at 10, wake up before 6, and don't eat after 6 p.m. in the evening. So if you can just do this one thing, a lot of metabolic problems actually get solved. And there are actually modern studies to show that too. Mm-hmm. So regularity of schedule is supremely important.
Mm. It's very interesting that you mentioned it. I come from Poland, and my grandmother, who hasn't finished actually any school, I think 4 classes of the primary school, let's say, prescription for longevity is to wake up exactly before 6 and don't eat after 6 p.m. So I was innerly smiling with you when you were saying it. So it seems to be like a universal cross-cultural wisdom around it. And I wonder, how would you explain this, the logic and the wisdom behind it?
Yeah, and it's actually, you know, this wisdom that your grandmother is very wise. And this wisdom actually comes from Ayurveda, which is so many thousands of years old. However, in 2017, 2 Americans won the Nobel Prize for Physiology. And that was for the description of the circadian rhythm. Mm. And what they did is actually, they you know, discovered the molecular and the genetic mechanisms for this wisdom. Mm. That is so many thousands of years old. So in other words, what happens is our entire physiology is based on separating the catabolic from the anabolic metabolism. So there is, and these two cycles, the catabolic and the anabolic. Anabolic means building, catabolic is breaking down. These two, you know, separate cycles or separate ways of the metabolic cycles, they are driven by two separate hormones. The catabolic, you know, metabolism process is mediated by cortisol, which is produced in the morning and it drives the whole day. And the nighttime cycle is the anabolic cycle, which is driven by melatonin. And they are kept separate by nature because otherwise it's like hitting the gas and the brake at the same time. You get nowhere. And so these two processes are kept separate so that, you know, the metabolic process that goes on during the day is completed before sunset. And then after sunset, melatonin takes over and starts to detoxify, which is getting rid of the free radicals. And so when this process happens uninterrupted, there the hormonal system, the neural system, the immune system, they work superbly well. They are at the optimal level of functioning. So I must say here, optimal level of functioning doesn't mean we'll never get sick. You know, it's not like that. Things can still happen, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just that we have a much higher resistance to these external stressors when we keep these two parts of the circadian rhythm separate. And that's why this wisdom, you know, it has worked for so many generations because of this logic, which now we know from modern science as well.
Thank you so much for this explanation.
You're so welcome.
I must say that my grandparents who lived in a very small traditional village, they all lived around 100 years and didn't visit doctors because they didn't have access to. So I'm really passionate about coming back to the roots and connecting them with the modern science. Thank you so much for it.
Oh, you're so welcome. That is my passion as well, because, you know, I found a lot of gaps in my training of modern medicine, things that could not be explained, you know, by modern medicine, and, you know, I found the answers in these ancient wisdom practices and the ancient traditions. And so bringing them together makes the most sense to me.
Beautiful. You mentioned before that the only certainty is uncertainty. And now I can tell you my secret, because I have some issues with the computer today. Everything got frozen like 10 past nine. So I'm just trusting in the connection. I'm trusting that that we are all together moving on the screens. But it means that I can't see the questions and answer question box. I wonder if there is any question from the community, from the listeners, if you could help me with that as I...
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Let me see. I don't see too many questions.
So we've got one question that's come in the Q&A. It says, what could be an explanation for a recurring pattern of sleep distribution at the same time every night?
Yes, so disruption, I think.
Yes, disruption.
Yeah. So it depends. So, for instance, in Ayurveda, we have, you know, a way of looking at these things, and it needs to be more holistic than just, you know, a 2-minute question answer. But if you have a pattern, for instance, where you go to sleep and then you wake up and you can't go back to sleep, that means something else. Mm-hmm. But if you have a pattern where you have a hard time even getting to sleep, then that's a different thing. Okay. So the first one is more of an issue of this disrupted neurohormonal pathway. Usually people that have that also have really, you know, a lot of thoughts, fragmented thoughts. You know, you're jumping from thought to thought, worry to worry, anxiety to anxiety. And it may not be, you know, like anxiety that needs medication, but it's like a constant disruption, you know. And in women who have this, It's you can also have irregular periods. You can have, you know, if you are postmenopausal, you can have hot flashes, and you can have digestive problems where, you know, one day it's okay, the next day it's not, and so on. So that is more of this disruption that we call primarily related to Vata. You know, Vata is the principle of movement. So it's excessive dryness and coldness in the body. The second one, on the other hand, where you're simply not able to fall asleep, and at 2, 3, 4, you're still looking at the clock, that has more to do with heat in the body. There's too much heat. So that's more of, you know, inflammation. Okay. So people that have this also tend to have perhaps a lot of heartburn, or occasional more frequent heartburn, and have, you know, this inability to bear hunger, and have other kinds of more frustration and anger and annoyance, and that kind of stuff. So it really depends on what type of disruption we are talking about. And but the beauty of it, doesn't matter what type of disruption it is, as long as we stick to this disciplined lifestyle, avoiding certain kinds of foods, and going to sleep at the same time, waking up at the same time, eating at the same time, all, you know, I would say 85% of these problems can be solved just through lifestyle.
Thank you for this, again, very comprehensive answer. It very interestingly for me links with other sessions I have been attending during the conference that were about trauma treatment and how important it is to first create a structure and stability before the healing processes on the of the trauma can activate. And it's beautiful how it links with this, also our physiology and our biology. I don't know if you maybe see similar links here as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, I read somewhere that recently that there is nobody who is not traumatized. You know, there is absolutely nobody who's trauma free. You know, simply the act of being alive is traumatic, right? In many ways. And it's a matter of spectrum. You know, it's really how much trauma one has been through, at what developmental stage, and how much that has carried on. And it is our innate, resilience or lack thereof, support, and so on. So there are many different factors for that. But whatever the case may be, you know, I definitely agree with this principle of first creating stability in our lifestyle. And simply doing this for months and months and months, where you're eating at the same time, eating the same thing, going to sleep at the same time, all of a sudden, what happens? And I've seen this again and again in my students, in my patients. After a while, you know, suddenly you have this surge of energy that you didn't have before, because you're no longer, that energy is not being leaked and wasted in thinking about other things, because now you're, you know, totally focused and grounded in the body. You're embodied. You know, that's what this conference is about. So, and that makes all the difference. And then, you know, we, a lot of the physiological problems are taken care of, and then we can deal with the other things.
So we've got a few more questions. If you don't mind, I cutting in here. One is that, do you have an easy way to explain the heart-brain coherence that, I don't know how I'm pronouncing this right, Jose Dispenza talks about?
Well, you know, the coherence here we're talking, I think you mean the electromagnetic waves and then the coherence. And there is a lot of actually research by the HeartMath Institute in this as well. So I think it's going to take a longer time to explain that. So maybe we can pass.
So not an easy one for that one. The next one, does either the Shakta Tantra or Shiva Tantric traditions you work in have any practices for death or sleep? All the spiritual embodiment works in Shakta Shiva Tantra have been so helpful for me. I wonder about if they are offering anything for leaving the body at the end of life and preparing for what is next.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, there's a lot of overlap between the non-dual Shaiva tantric tradition and Tibetan Buddhism, Vajrayan, and even some elements of Mahayana, actually. And so, you know, there, because of this overlap, the, you know, the practices of the Tibetan Book of the Dead are incorporated into some of these streams. So there are practices like that.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And I think we've got time for one or two more. So the next one is, where would you recommend Westerners interested in learning more about the teachings of Tantra and how to apply them in life?
Yeah. So if you don't mind, I'll give you a resource that, you know, may seem like conflict of interest, but I have a course called Foundations of Tantra. And so it's a four-part course that goes into the philosophy and practice of non-dual tantra. And that may be a good place to start.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Yolanda, for jumping in and saving me here. I rejoined and I can see you all and see myself. It's a very comforting feeling. Were there more questions, Yolanda? We still have 1 minute. I don't know if this is a time maybe to jump with one quick question or not necessarily.
Yes, we do have, this might be quite a quick one. Is it true that it's bad to eat fruits with food?
Yes, yes. In fact, you know, in my diet program, and I have my own diet that I, you know, that comes from my lineage and tradition that I give to all my patients and students, I suggest not eating fruit at all until we have established some stability in the body. But it is true that fruit should be eaten on its own about 2 or 3 hours after a meal and before a meal.
Is it possible for people to find your advices on diet and routine on your website or in your books?
Sounds yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's in The Heart of Wellness, which is the book, and the new edition is coming out in a couple weeks, actually. And there is a Heart of Wellness course as well that is on my website.
Thank you so much. I'm sure this short but very fascinating discussion encourage people to dive deeper. And as we've got, our time is coming to closure, I have this traditional question that we have at the end of every panel. That is, what is your favorite embodiment practice that you would like to recommend people?
Yeah, and that is a great question. My go-to is always the breath. And so the thing that really helps, and you can try this even now, is the one thing that connects the world around us and our minds to our bodies is the breath. So simply becoming aware of the breath changes everything. You know, it changes the rhythm of the breath. Suppose you are hyperventilating for whatever reason, or you are catching your breath. As soon as you become aware of the breath, it releases. And you'll actually feel a different sensation in the body, and your posture changes. And the more you become aware of it, you actually don't even need to be stopping. Initially, you may have to stop for a couple minutes and just breathe and become aware of your belly and your breath. But as you become more clear about this, all it takes is a tiny little deflection of the mind to bring attention to your breath. And that becomes your default. And again, you come back to the breath. So you're always embodied, so to speak.
Thank you so much. It was very fascinating for me to have this pleasure and honor to talk with you for this time.
Thank you.
Is there a closing sentence or a closing message you would like to pass on people at the end of our session?
I hope that you will make an effort to understand what Tantra really is and how practical it is in day-to-day application, And I hope that whatever you're looking for, you will find. And may your journey be successful in every way. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kavita.
Thank you.
To everyone who have been with us here live, thank you for your presence, for your questions. And there was a lot of information that you may like to come back to. This video recording will be available for 48 hours. But of course, you can also own the library of Embodiment Conference. All the links are placed in chat, so you can have access to this ocean of knowledge at your own pace, in your own time. There are also links to Kavita's Chennaiyan website and books, so you can dive deeper on your own. And if you would like to reflect more on it, we have coffee break rooms that where we meet and discuss and reflect. So feel warmly invited to join as well. Thank you, everyone. It was pleasure. And I wish you all to go to sleep early and wake up early tomorrow as well. Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you to Julia for being amazing tech host and Yolanda for saving me as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was really wonderful. We really enjoyed that.
Thank you. Me too.